Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is the Week in Review.
I think Zelensky is maybe the greatest salesman of any politician that's ever lived.
I trust you as far as I throw your phone. I have a good arm, man.
Absolutely.
I can throw it a long way.
We need to be able to talk about what Zionism does to the Palestinians without being smeared as anti-Semites.
Mr. Trump says what most won't. Mr. Biden attacks a friendly for some reason. And Mehdi Hasan does a mic drop on Israel. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. Okay, there is so much to talk about, and we have the perfect panel with which to discuss these things. Joining me to drill down on the week's big stories that are mostly ignored, underreported, or misreported by the corporate media are Garland Nixon and Dr. Wilmer Leon. These guys have their own show on Sputnik Radio, which is called The Critical Hour. In fact, you can Google it to watch it if you want and listen to their latest show using that, right? The Critical Hour. Just put it in and you'll be able to listen to their show, and it's good. These guys are entertaining. Most of the time, they're really smart, too. President Putin. Now, put these guys up on camera. I want to see their reaction after I said that. All right. See? Yeah, they know I'm kidding. All right, let's start with President Putin. He is continuing his world tour in Vietnam. But before that, he was in North Korea. Hadn't been there, by the way, since 2000. Is he really going there because he likes to have a lot of people who are forced to applaud for him? No, not really. But nonetheless, here it is. It's impressive. It is cool to look at that. I mean, we usually can't get three Americans to do anything in unison. But anyway, here's Mr. Putin and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. They signed a comprehensive strategic pact. They're pledging to have each other's backs if they're attacked. I think they both need a new tailor, but that's besides the point. Interestingly enough, the U.S. State Department put out a message criticizing the two countries for sharing weapons and ammunition, which is kind of weird. The U.S. State Department is criticizing North Korea and Russia for exchanging weapons, which is exactly what the United States and NATO are doing in Ukraine. You can't make this stuff up. So anyway, Wilmer, what do you think of this visit?
I think the visit is a brilliant strategic move, as Russia is very concerned about the United States expanding the conflict in Ukraine, as North Korea is very concerned about the United States expanding a conflict in the Pacific. Both of these countries, who also have an adjoining border, are providing covering the backs of each other. And the manner in which they've structured this agreement, I think, is incredibly brilliant. They differentiate between being in a state of war versus being invaded. Neither party can engage in a third party agreement that challenges the sovereignty of the other. It calls for constant negotiation and dialogue between the two. I think it's a brilliant move.
You know what I think? I think it has nothing to do with needing to go to North Korea. I think it has nothing to do with the agreement. I think it has everything to do with what I think Mr. Putin is trying to do, and that is put his middle finger to the West and say, okay, so you want to send troops to attack my people. You give permission to Ukraine to use missiles on my people. You want to use proxies to attack my country? Okay, two can play at this game. Suddenly, he shows up with ships in Havana. Next thing you know, he's doing nuclear military exercises. Now he's doing exercises in the Caribbean. And now he shows up in North Korea, the country that most of the West seems to fear and think is the boogie monster. I think this is all about message sending, Garland.
Yes and no. I agree with you. There is a message to be sent here, and that's definitely part of this. Is a response to the recent news that we've gotten about long-range weapons being used against the Russian Federation. However, I also think that there's a practical perspective to be discussed here, because look, the U.S. they both of these parties understand that the U.S. has embarked upon a goal of world domination, that the Russia-Ukraine conflict is part of a greater plan. People even refer to it as the Ukraine project. We've got to do this. We go after China. We go after other countries. So I think they realize that they have to build a, and I'll use this term loosely, anti-imperialist or anti-hegemonic bloc to protect themselves from an entity that has worldwide aspirations of domination.
Yeah, no, I think we're kind of saying the same thing. Me being a communicator, I see everything as message building and message sending. And I think he's creating a message, but he's also something doing that both of you mentioned, is it's important to create alliances, because if you don't, then you're one country going up against the West. Here you're 4, 5, 6, 7 different countries going up against the West, and that's a lot more important. Points well made. All right, here's a shocker. Ready? Or maybe just a fake announcement. I can't tell. But a Ukrainian ambassador, her name is Katerina Zelenko, is on the record now saying that Ukraine would be willing to attend a peace summit sponsored by China that would include Russian officials. Really? Wow. Here's a statement. I'm going to read it to you. Ukraine would consider participating in a Beijing-led peace summit with both warring sides present, so long as talks are based on the rules and principles enshrined in the UN Charter and international law. Garland, are they bluffing? Because if they do this, this would be akin to a real summit as opposed to that sham thing they did in Switzerland, I think. What do you say?
My argument is yes. I think bluff may be a good word for it, for this reason. They're looking bad. They've said that the Russians are unreasonable, and the Russians just want to destroy Ukraine and tear it apart and, you know, go all the way to the English Channel, whatever. And the representatives of the Russian government have demonstrated that they are available for a discussion, that they are amenable to a diplomatic resolution. And I think Ukraine understands that they're looking kind of bad right now. The world's looking at them and saying, hey, these people are saying they want to talk, and you're saying you don't want to talk. I think they had to say this, but I think if it came down to it, they would try to find a way to back out of it.
Quickly, if you could, Wilmer, do you think they're bluffing, or do you think in the end they'll just come up with some, I don't know, I don't want to say cockamamie, but I'll say it, a cockamamie excuse. Sorry, we can't attend. We got a note from our doctor. Whatever.
They are bluffing, but that doesn't mean that bluff isn't an attempt to try to find an angle out. This comes on the heels of President Putin giving what he said were going to be his last demands, his last triad demands. There's a story today that the United States is looking to abandon Zelensky. So this could be, I don't doubt it's a bluff, but that doesn't mean that your bluff left doesn't mean you're trying to go right and still go to the rim.
Yeah, it's still significant that they're trying to show the world that they're willing to do it, even if they end up not doing it. That's actually a great point. That's actually a great point. Well done. All right, look, say what you want about Donald Trump. There's plenty to say, right? This guy always has his finger on the pulse of what deep down most Americans are thinking, right? And he will say what most politicians won't even say when they know it's true. And so it is with Mr. Trump's recent comment that he just did this last weekend about unelected Ukrainian strongman Volodymyr Zelensky. Here it is.
I think Zelensky is maybe the greatest salesman of any politician that's ever lived.
Every time he comes to our country, he walks away with $60 billion.
Every time he comes to our country. I love this. There's something just magnetic about him when he just pours his soul into a thought process. And this is an interesting thing, because I went into the streets of Miami and talked to people in restaurants here. Most people agree with the guy, okay? Polls show, by the way, the vast majority of Republicans, and a small majority of Democrats all say they're sick and tired of sending all this money to Ukraine. So do you think Trump said this because he knows that? Or is he just once again being bold, Garland?
Well, one of the advantages that Donald Trump has over so many other politicians is that he doesn't have these boundaries, these rhetorical boundaries. You can't say this or that, or the system's going to attack you. He doesn't care. He understands, the guy's an entertainer. He understands how to make the audience laugh or go along with the audience. And so he has a tremendous advantage. That's why, I mean, at this point, I'd have to bet all things being taken into account that Donald Trump probably wins for reasons like that. He is speaking what the polls say people want to hear. He doesn't have to play the rhetoric game, well, you can't say that or you're a Putin bot.
Yeah. And what's weird is, you're right, on Ukraine, he is speaking what the polls say and he's speaking what's in the hearts of most Americans. On Israel, he won't do that, though. Will he, Wilmer?
Oh, no, because he understands very clearly which side of the bread his butter is on and whose butter it is. So he is an incredible marketeer. He sticks his finger out the window. He understands which way the wind is blowing, and he speaks in that direction. But there is a difference between the Trump rhetoric and the Trump action and the Trump policy. And this, what we are seeing, I believe, playing itself out in Ukraine has less to do with administration policy and more to do with the military-industrial complex. And that is much more powerful than any president a la Dwight Eisenhower.
Would you say he learned his lesson the first time around that you don't mess with those people? And he's willing to mess a little bit, but not fully. Israel, you don't mess with that. You don't mess with that beast.
Well, you didn't hear him say he was going to reverse the policy, I don't think.
Of course not.
He just spoke to the sentiment of the electorate, but he did not offer. He didn't say, when I get there the next day, the money's cut off, because he loves to talk about being able to do something within 24 hours. So he didn't say that.
Yeah, he did. He said by the time he moves into the White House, he'll have this thing settled. But you're right. Having it settled and saying, I'm not going to send any more money, those are two different statements. And I'm glad you mentioned that and broke that down, or the difference between those two things. All right, when we come back, we got to do this. And it's sad. I don't like doing it, but it's sad. But we have to do it. I mean, this week, more videos came out of Joe Biden. He's got an image problem. He looks like a feeble little old man, and it's not me saying it, it's your eyes seeing it on video, and now the whole country and the whole world is seeing it, and we're gonna play some of these for you and talk about, you know, what's gonna happen here? What's gonna happen with the White House? What are the Democrats gonna do? Stay right there, because this is an important discussion. All right, welcome back. This is the Week in Review. I'm Rick Sanchez. Mr. Biden has an image problem, and it's kind of sad. Now, White House spokespersons are saying it's not an image problem, and all this video that I'm about to show you is not true, and me and others are just making it up. But people are seeing it with their own eyes, Americans and people all over the world. And what they're seeing is an older man who looks feeble, who looks confused, and at times, just, I gotta say it. I mean, my mother went through this. He looks like he's kind of losing it. All right? Take a look.
I don't wanna love nobody but you. I don't wanna love nobody but you. I don't wanna love nobody but you.
I don't know if you can see, but everybody's dancing. Everybody's reacting to the music. He's not. He just is like, And I think we got it too late, because if you'd seen it earlier, you really would have been able to tell. This is really weird. This is at the G7. You see the guys doing an exit. Look at Biden. Now he just kind of walks off. He's walking away from the other world leaders. So the prime minister of Italy, Meloni, has to go and grab him like she's his granddaughter or something and bring him back to the crowd. Like, okay, we're over here, you know. And we're just showing you clips. If you saw the whole thing, you'd probably see an impression for yourself. Now, take a look at this. Here's another one. This is the president. This is a White House event where everybody who comes in is super checked, high security. All the attendees have been handpicked. They're all friendlies. There's nobody there who's going to be antagonistic with the president. No reporters are there. A couple of social media personalities. This guy who he comes up to, for example, is a TikTok guy. And the guy asks him a reasonable question, right, about what's going on in Israel. Watch Biden's nonsensical response.
And I know you're a typical press guy. You're grabbing me in front of this all this. I trust you as far as I throw your phone. I have a good arm, man.
Absolutely.
I can throw it a long way. But my point is this.
Yes.
I have made very clear to the Israelis what they have to do in the near term. If they don't, what's going to happen?
So what's going to happen? Is the U.S. going to cut off funding?
I came because you told me I have a nice suit and you didn't comment on my suit today, so I don't feel a little offended.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can you step back in, sir, please? Thank you.
So once again, his aides have to come in and grab him and walk him away. By the way, what he just said makes no sense. He said, I trust you as far as I can throw your phone, but by the way, I got a great arm and I can throw the phone a long way. Well, what? I don't know, Wilmer. Look, I had to deal with this in my family, with my dad and my mom
as
recently.
Did I.
Yeah, I take no joy or comfort in showing these videos or talking about them, but he's the president of the United States, man.
It's not a good look because it's not a good reality. It's bad optics because it's a bad reality. It's a cognitive decline.
Yeah.
Which is not going to get better over time. Cognitive decline only gets worse. I don't know how the president is going to be able to make it through the debate with no prepared notes. In fact, one can only wonder, is this really a setup? And I'm not being conspiratorial here, but are they trying to lay the groundwork to where he is embarrassed enough to where he has to step down?
Yeah.
Because this makes no sense.
It is hard to watch and to hear his spokesperson recently say that this is all fake news and fake video, then we're all setting this stuff up and showing. Man, I got to tell you, that's a stupid statement. I'm sorry.
Believe your lying eyes.
Yeah. It's like he's really filled with vim and vigor. If you just saw him at home, he's running a mile and come on.
Well, and here's the other part side of it, Rick. It begs an obvious question. Who's running the show?
Yeah.
You know, he's the president, clearly. I mean, you know, any reasonable person looks at Joe Biden and it's obvious that he does not have the ability to make, you know, important decisions, to understand the details of these situations. And then make, no.
Yeah.
Which means it's Blinken, it's Sullivan. These people are very, very scary people. And again, you know, to me, I feel like the ruling elite, to some extent, are mocking us. They're mocking the voters to stick Joe Biden, and don't even get me started on Kamala Harris, the only person who probably is in worse physical or cognitive shape than Joe Biden is Kamala Harris, and she doesn't even have the excuse of age.
We won't go there just yet, but we're planning some shows on that as well. By the way, I said this a long time ago. You guys remember? I said this back in March. Joe Biden, come November, will not be the candidate for the Democrats. He will be switched out. My opinion, and we'll see what happens. Did you want?
I've been saying that for a year and a half.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. All right.
They trapped themselves.
I want you. There's another video I want to watch. I want you to watch. Watch this next video. It's Mehdi Hasan. This is a guy who was fired by MSNBC, just like I was fired for CNN, kind of for the same reason, by the way. Tell him the truth. By the way, they liked him when he was in agreement with all the stuff they reported MSNBC, in agreement with the U.S. State Department points, like, for example, Ukraine. Regardless, this takedown by Mehdi Hasan of Israeli commentators at a debate, which apparently has now been seen by millions and millions of people, this is pretty epic. Watch.
Let me just deal with something you just said. You talked about debunking propaganda. First of all, you can't even get Israeli propaganda straight. The Israeli government's own security agency, Shin Bet, investigated what you just said and said, no, we found no evidence that workers from Gaza were involved in the October 7th attack. Oh, Shin Bet are lying. They're booing Shin Bet, the Israeli security service. Got it. So let's talk about war crimes. It is amazing that every human rights group in the world, including Israeli human rights group like B'Tselem, Gisha, Yesh Din, are all documenting this stuff, but you guys think it's all imaginary. So again, it tells you about what Zionism is. This is not about some abstract ideology of, you know, people trying to settle the land and trying to have it. But as Gideon said, there was an argument to be had in the 1940s, 30s, 20s. Zionism today is what the Palestinians are enduring on a daily, nightly basis in Gaza, in the West Bank, in East Jerusalem, in Israel itself. And the erasure of that tells you everything about why we need to be able to talk about what Zionism does to the Palestinians without being smeared as anti-Semites.
Okay. Seemed to me like he hit all the points, and it goes on for quite some time. We had to cut it down for the sake of the show. But it's undeniable, most of the stuff he's saying, Garland.
Well, absolutely, and I think he does a brilliant job of demonstrating something, and that is that, look, Zionism is a political ideology, and that people, I mean, in America, you know, I've gone to, you know, numerous protests, and they are often led by Jewish Americans that,
yes.
You know, the... yeah, so that the issue of Zionism is not an issue of Judaism, and that unfortunately the political entities are using the Jewish people, and I'll just be straight, as human shields
yeah.
for Zionism. And he exposes that in a brilliant discussion.
By the way, and you know, this is interesting, Wilmer. I don't know if you want to share an opinion on this because you know the people that I'm talking about because we share some staff members and we know some of the same people, but... Some of the guys on my team and gals told me, don't run this. Do not run this story. This guy's a fake and a phony. He's been pro-State Department. When he worked at MSNBC, he was cheering on the Ukraine war. And all of a sudden, it's something he cares about. So suddenly, he switches over and he becomes a voice for against Israel and Palestine. I said, no. I mean, we can't control what people think. They can't always be right. So I thought it was important to run this. What do you think of that editorial decision?
I'm glad you ran it because what Mehdi said was right. So that shows you that even a blind squirrel can find a nut in the forest sometimes. And what this tells us is, or what this demonstrates, is another example of the greatest fear of the Zionists. They have lost control of the narrative.
Yeah.
And I keep going back to the Washington Post story where New York Mayor Eric Adams, they have a WhatsApp chat stream of millionaires and billionaires telling Eric Adams, you have to go into Columbia University. You have to take down that encampment because we are losing control of the narrative.
Exactly.
Their lies don't work anymore.
And to your point, I was just going to say, and to your point, a lot of the people who were taken down were Jews.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, exactly. Not Zionists, Jews.
Right, right. All right, so we talk a lot here on this show about the corporate media. So this is interesting because, you know, Jon Stewart and I have a history together. This has to do with my firing at CNN, by the way. And Jon Stewart since then have become friends and we talk. But leave it to Jon Stewart to explain this. Jon Stewart, he recently quit Apple Media when he realized that they wanted to control what he said on his show. He's got enough money that he didn't need the job, so he quit. So here's now how he describes what it's like to be a member of any media entity today in the United States. Go.
When you work for a corporate entity, that's part of the deal. Like, even at Comedy Central, like, the deal is I get to do what I want until they think it's going to hurt their beer sales or whatever it is that they want to sell. And that's the deal we all make. Nobody is owed a platform. And when you're in somebody's house and they want you to take your shoes off, you take your shoes off or you go to somebody else's house.
Yeah. So much for free speech, right? Now, here's one of the most trusted people in the media in the United States saying the media in the United States is not free. Garland, are you shocked?
Not at all. I think we all understand that. And that is, in fact, one of the things that we see, one of the dynamics that we often see is we'll see Boeing or one of these a huge defense contractors, advertise like a $100 million fighter on CNN or MSNBC or something. Well, certainly we know that the people that are watching aren't going to buy that plane. They don't have $100 million, right. But it allows them to then control what that particular outlet says because they don't want to upset their upset their, you know, their advertising funders. So there's a dynamic here that ends up with a CNN or MSNBC that claims to represent the so-called left or Democrats or whatever. And in reality, when you look at the polls, they're trying to influence and control the so-called left and Democrats as opposed to represent them.
And let me just say, and maybe I close with this, as a longtime journalist who's been in this business, who, as you know, I worked at CNN, I worked at Fox, I worked at MSNBC, I worked in local news, I worked in Spanish television, I worked in radio, it's gotten worse. I mean, there was a time when there was a sense of ethics and dignity, at least. This has always happened, but in the past, if you were a salesperson and you walked into the newsroom, the news director had the right to chew your ass out. And I even saw a news director punch the lights out of a salesperson for coming into the newsroom and telling reporters what to report. Well, today, commonplace. That's our show. Remember, always look outside your own box. Truths don't live in boxes. It's been a pleasure talking, fellows. I appreciate the conversation. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll see you again next time.